This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivisodi. It's our public health series. It's number 35. It's happened for such a long time. Together with Azrul Muhammad Kaleb, the CEO of the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. Welcome to the show, Azrul. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thank you. It's another day, another CMCO.
It is. The first day of the CMCO. We're supposed to have this conversation together with Dr. Christopher Lee, an infectious diseases physician. We're unable to get him on the line with us, but we're going to proceed with this conversation with Azrul first. And I think the topic for today is Malaysia's access to a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, we've seen this spike of COVID-19 cases. It sort of reminds you that the pandemic is not going away anytime soon. And with recent developments on the vaccine front, we're going to be looking at what Malaysia's options are for procuring a COVID-19 vaccine and what there's something called a COVAX facility. What does that actually mean for Malaysia? So we'll tell you more and get into this conversation. But if you'd like to ask a question, the number to call us is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We also did try to invite the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation to join this panel, but we did not hear back from them. So we're going to be running with the show anyway. Azrul, what are your thoughts on the current CMCO? There's a lot of talk about, it's going to cripple the economy. Government says it's not going to cripple the economy because businesses are allowed to function anyway. I find that hard to get my head around because, for an example, even if I just want to go and have dinner outside, I can't because I can't cross daerah and I need a letter from my employer what to have dinner. No, I can't do that. Only two people can dine on one table, that kind of thing. So what does this actually mean, Azrul?
Well, what we have been able to see from what has been described now as the third wave of the COVID-19 epidemic in Malaysia is that this is what happens when we let our guard down and that we become complacent with the earlier lower numbers and when we don't really look into some of the more vulnerable populations that are now being inflicted with this disease. When you look at the Sabah, Kedah and even the Penang situation where there are now hundreds of cases coming from people who are in detention, who are in remand, who are in prison. And these are cases which have actually emerged as a result of the virus being introduced into these populations, which are living in crowded, closed, confined conditions where it's not possible to do physical distancing, but also it's very hard for there to be the kind of, face mask wearing and kind of SOPs that we would have, between you and I. But also for Sabah especially, is that we see there so many unlinked cases that have emerged in the community, which indicate that, the virus has actually spread into the community and is going through new populations that have nothing to do with the existing identified clusters. And the same thing for the Klang Valley, where we started to see some cases unlinked, which have emerged in malls. One after another, we started to hear more and more malls having cases and the malls having to shut down and be sanitized. So what this tells us is that this disease is here for the long run, and it is something that we're going to have to manage and learn to live with for the next couple of years at least. And certainly how we're going to go about tackling it will be based on how vigilant we are, but also how compliant we are to the SOPs until the day a vaccine is developed and is made available for all Malaysians.
So let's talk about this vaccine. There's so many vaccine candidates. Azrul, I think the last time I had a virologist on, he said there were about 160 vaccine trials that were going on. Some have been halted. AstraZeneca halted global trials for the vaccine because, one person came down with was it a neurological condition, if I'm I correct? And yes. Then just this week, Johnson & Johnson have paused their vaccine trial because of an unexplained illness in a participant. So where are we at the moment? And, you know, Malaysia has also taken steps to try and be in, you know, get our foot in as well, so that we have access to a vaccine eventually. So we've been a part of something called COVAX, which is led by the WHO, the Coalition of Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, something called CEPI, and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. And they aim to deliver some 2 billion doses of vaccines around the world by the end of next year. That's just one, right? And Malaysia, it will pave the way for Malaysia to also be a part of this, but we will have to pay quite a lot of money to be a part of this this program. The other one is also just, was it today or just yesterday, the government has signed an MOU with China to be amongst the first to receive the COVID-19 vaccine from the country when it is indeed available. Of course, all of this is money, and there are restrictions in terms of how much they're, how many doses they're actually going to give you. So from China, we're only going to be able to, you know, vaccinate 10% or immunize 10% of our population. And with COVAX, there's also going to be pretty much a limit. So let's talk about that, Azrul. What came to your mind about COVAX? Do you think that Malaysia will gain much from COVAX? Or the whole idea of COVAX is great. It is a pool of financial and scientific resources to bring higher income countries to finance COVID-19 vaccines from their own national budgets for 92 low and middle income countries who will receive this support. Now, what do you think? Is Malaysia a low or medium income country?
Well, for one thing, Malaysia is an upper middle income country, which is about to become high income country.
So we're not in that bracket.
We definitely are not in the bracket of countries that will have our vaccines heavily subsidized or given for free. And if we were to go back to that question concerning the number of vaccines that are available, that are being developed, the vaccine candidates, there are more than 160. And the reality here is that the majority will fail. And that's important for us to understand, because what is going through right now in different parts of the world is an unprecedented effort to develop a vaccine in the shortest time possible so that it can be made available to as many people as possible, making use of the expertise that's available in the different parts of the world, many of which are actually in developed countries. And this is something that because it's still something that we have not seen before, there is no vaccine available for COVID-19 and never has been. It's important for us to see this as an effort to develop something new, which requires there to be investment, which requires there to be a certain amount of capital that's to be made. And most importantly, to ensure that as many countries, as many people are able to get the vaccine once it becomes available. So COVAX, when it was put together, this was how it envisaged that it would want to promote equity. And certainly every country has its own vaccine plan. Very few countries that are able, such as Malaysia, will only depend on one plan. They will have multiple plans. Bilateral agreements like what Malaysia has now announced it has done with China is one of the things that a lot of other countries, including the United States, China itself, European countries and so forth, are doing. While they're talking about COVAX, they're also talking about trying to get and procure arrangements which are separate to that. And the reason being this is because it's something that we've not seen yet. It has not existed before. The risks are high of us failing if we put all of our eggs into one basket. So COVAX, what it does is, in the same way insurance operates, you spread out the risk, you spread out the number of people, you have economies of scale. And because of those reasons, we're talking about billions of dosages of vaccines. You're also to bring the cost of the vaccines once it becomes available down. So when we compare, for example, the highest cost of a COVAX vaccine that has been announced through the initiative, the most that a vaccine would be able to cost, and this is assuming it's a two-dosage application, will be $20. Now, when you compare that against China's own initiative of developing vaccine, and this is certainly one of the companies that's involved, it has indicated around $148. So because of economies of scale, because of so many countries being involved in the initiative, you can bring down the cost. And through the individual contributions by these countries, you're also able to ensure that the research and development for this vaccine is able to be funded by countries that are able to provide that funding. And there will be countries that will be beneficiaries of the vaccines that are going to be available where they do not pay anything at all or they pay a little bit. So it's basically an international global effort to try to make sure that as many countries get access to this vaccine as possible.
And China. And China.
And preventing a situation where some countries are unable to access because they can't afford the vaccine.
Yep.
So I think that's quite a noble effort there.
And China announced earlier today that they have signed an agreement to join COVAX as well now, isn't it?
Exactly.
And which is the biggest economy to back the WHO-led vaccine plan, which is good news, really.
It is.
So, I mean, so Azrul, that means if we're working with China separately, we've got, and if China is part of COVAX as well now, does that mean that we get the vaccines through COVAX or do we go directly to China? Or we can do both?
It could be both. One of the things that a lot of other countries that are in a position to have these options is doing is that, again, it doesn't want to depend on only one source of the vaccine. Again, when we talk about a vaccine, we're talking about one vaccine. We're not talking about the vaccine. We don't know which will be the holy grail, as it were, that will actually be the vaccine that's going to be widely available. So there could be three or four that become safe, that become effective, and most importantly, for a lot of developed countries, affordable. And for Malaysia, our criteria is going to be that it's safe and effective. And when we talk about effective, it's going to be more than 80% in terms of its effectiveness. And that's some of the criteria that the government of Malaysia has indicated that it would want to consider when it looks at a vaccine to be able to apply to citizens.
Are there limitations to that, though?
Well, absolutely.
It's like gambling, isn't it? Put all your eggs in one basket and you know, you're winning all the way if it works, or you lose everything.
Yeah. That's why COVAX is so important. COVAX doesn't depend on one vaccine. COVAX actually depends on a basket full of vaccine candidates that it's funding and it's supporting. And out of that basket of vaccines, there will be three vaccines that will be selected for the initial rollout through the COVAX initiative. Now, it's important to emphasize here that there are going to be countries that have to pay their way or self-finance their participation in COVAX. And there are going to be countries that are going to be subsidized or the vaccines are going to be given free. Malaysia falls under the first category. So we're considered just like Singapore, just like the United Kingdom, China. These are going to be countries that will be expected to pay a certain amount in order for them to be able to participate in COVAX. So it's important that Malaysia contributes to this global effort because at the end of the day, this is not going to be a free, something that's free, that's going to be something that requires somebody else to step in. It's going to be us that has to step in to be part of that. And it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. The Prime Minister has said that we we'll probably have to fork out about 42 million first, 42 million ringgit first, and that's only the beginning. There's a lot more that, you know, we'll have to negotiate with later on. And our Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation, Khairi Jamaluddin, has said that we will also have to work harder at, you know, perhaps even manufacturing this vaccine, isn't it, going forward? And I want to also ask about what that entails going forward. So we'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question on the accessibility of vaccines for Malaysians, the COVID-19 vaccine, do give us a call. The number is 0377332900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our public health show. Azrul Muhammad Khalid, the CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, in the studio with me. We are discussing Malaysia's access to a COVID-19 vaccine. I think earlier on we were speaking about COVAX. If you just want to have an idea of what it is, it aims, it's sort of a pool of financial and scientific resources from high-income countries. It's used then to finance the COVID-19 vaccine from their own national budgets, while 92 low and medium middle-income countries will receive financial support to access these vaccines. As you said, Azrul, some of these lower and middle-income countries will either be subsidized and some will get it for free. Malaysia, unfortunately, is in that bracket of middle to high-income country, so we will probably have to pay some money to be a part of the COVAX scheme. So 42 million is the initial sort of payment to pave the way for this to be a part of it. Khairi Jamaluddin has said that, you know, the Prime Minister needs to allocate billions in the budget for this. Whether or not that's going to be done is something that we need to look out for. I mean, it is priority at the moment, don't you think, Azrul?
Absolutely. In fact, the amount that's necessary is not 42 million. When you look at how much of the population that you need to cover, what you actually find is that for 20% of Malaysia's 32 million population, and we are talking about 6.4 million people, the total amount of money that's necessary for Malaysia to pay out to COVAX is actually a total of 558.46 million. So the initial 42 million is really down payment, the initial down payment for 10%. Possibly covering just 10%. You know, yeah. So, and this is important because COVAX, when you are hearing all these numbers concerning COVAX, it's not talking about 100% of the population.
Yeah.
It's actually talking about the 20% most of the population, of people who are the most vulnerable, who are most urgently needed and prioritized individuals. So you're talking about people who are working in healthcare, people who are maybe the elderly, people who are needing to have access to this vaccine before everybody else. So you still got to figure out how do you then finance the other 80% of the population. If you've covered them under COVAX, you still need to figure out how you can go about ensuring that the majority of your population is still vaccinated against the disease. So Malaysia really has to look at a way for it to finance this, because as you said, you know, it's going to be a priority. Honestly, when you look at the budget that's going to be announced for 2021, you can bet on it that a chunk of it will be dedicated towards not just COVAX, but also developing Malaysia's own capacity of looking and being able to secure its own future when it comes to vaccine security. So this could be beyond COVAX, but also looking at other diseases as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we're sort of looking at two local pharma companies, Duo Pharma and Pharmaniaga, who could possibly undertake the fill and finish work for COVID-19 vaccines in Malaysia. I mean, at this stage, would you say this is critical, Azrul? I mean, I think we've got far more work to do in just securing the supply of the vaccine, being able to afford it. what do you think?
Well, as to whether or not Malaysia can afford it, seriously, I think we have to be able to get around to the idea that Malaysia is an upper-middle-income country. We can afford this. We can step up. We can do our part in terms of being part of the global effort, but most importantly, being with other people who are in line to ensure that they're able to get vaccines for their population. Because it's not just about ensuring that you're able to have access, but it's most importantly that you're able to have the ability to procure them as soon as possible. So in terms of future security, you need to be part of that. If we're not part of COVAX, we could end up being at the back of the line after everybody else has received their vaccine dosages, and then only Malaysia comes, you know, or is being considered to be given the vaccine. So we need to prevent ourselves from being in that situation. But, you know, when we look at ensuring that we have supply of these vaccines, that's why the bilateral agreement is important. even right now, what Malaysia is doing, which is considering it to develop its own capacity, just like Indonesia, which is currently a source of manufacturing for vaccines, and same thing goes with Thailand and India. It may be about time that Malaysia, as a country that has high value individuals, good talent, you know, all the ingredients for us to be able to develop a robust life sciences industry, we should be able to develop our own vaccines as well. But that is really a question for the future rather than for the acute needs today. So when we talk about these two companies that are being considered to be part of a fill and finish arrangement, honestly, Mira, it's still premature to actually say that they're going to be able to do that, simply because we do not know how these vaccines will look like. You know, whether it's going to be attenuated viruses, is it going to be synthetic peptides? Will it need a cold chain? You know, there's a whole number of factors that will come into play, and the complexity of the development and manufacturing of human vaccines will matter in terms of how we're able to develop and produce these vaccines. So Malaysia has not had a history of human vaccine manufacturing. And this is important to note. We've only had a limited capacity of human vaccine manufacturing where it's experimental, but not in the kind of volumes that you know, Indonesia has done, for example. So really, it's going to be a little bit tricky for a country that does not have that history to be then given the trust to then roll out these vaccines quickly and in the kind of quality and reliability that we would want to expect from countries that have had a mature industry doing that. So I think for the future, that certainly is a good plan, and definitely because we're going to need these vaccines for years to come, it makes sense to be able to have our own indigenous capacity to develop some of these vaccines.
So there will be somewhat of a queue, isn't it, Azrul, when even if you're part of COVAX, because they're looking at 2 billion doses by the end of next year. I mean, our population is, what, 7 billion plus. 2 billion is only about one third, slightly more than that. So this queue is going to be terribly important. And also, when the first vaccine comes out, you know, soon after, you're going to get better vaccines. You might have a two-dose vaccine at the moment. Yeah. You might get a better one in a couple of months that may only need one dose, right?
Yeah.
And all sorts of improvements to the vaccine. So we really need, I suppose I can see how COVAX is so much more inclusive and the best way forward for us to be a part of as far as this whole vaccine thing is concerned. But do you have any concerns at all at where we are at the moment and perhaps how we're going in terms of managing the virus at the moment, Azrul? Do you think we're doing our best in terms of testing and making sure that everybody is safe as such?
Well,
because really, Azrul, we cannot be going into a CMCO every couple of months. We came out of it CMCO May 4th, I believe. June 9th was the RMCO, and we're barely in October and we're back in a CMCO. We can't be going into a CMCO every 2-3 months.
I totally agree with you, Mira. We can't lurch from one CMCO to the next CMCO and imagine the kind of damage it does to people's lives, you know. And certainly we're not just talking about COVID-19 as a disease itself. We're looking at livelihoods, we're looking at people, communities affected by what CMCO imposes upon people's daily lives. And this is why it's important for us to remember again and again the messages that have been put out by the Ministry of Health, reminding people to not be complacent, to be vigilant, and to continuously adopt behaviors that are intended to protect ourselves as well as our loved ones, you know. And it can be quite exasperating for people working in public health to see people who have let their guard down, they've taken things for granted, they're not wearing face masks, they're having these major conferences and meetings, and nobody's wearing face masks at a table that's seating six, you know, and there's a lot of exasperation when we've seen even public figures, politicians, even civil servants and government officials themselves not following SOPs, yet at the same time, the same standards are being imposed on normal, everyday individuals. And then it's done in very harsh and unforgiving manner, you know, and people get frustrated by that. So there's a lot of frustration that is coming from both the people working to prevent the disease from spreading, but also from the people for which these rules and regulations are being imposed on. And this needs to be cleared up, you know, because this is a joint effort. We all need to be part of this until this vaccine becomes available. And this is very important for us to remember. If and when it becomes available, it could be the middle of next year. And that is the best case scenario. I know recently there's been some talk that perhaps with the Chinese, the arrangement with the Chinese government, perhaps the vaccine could even be available by the end of the year. Now, this is something that we need to be conservative about. If not, we sound like Donald Trump, you know, and this is something that we want to be able to be realistic in managing our expectations.
I've asked a virologist this question, and I'm going to ask you this question, Azro. If a vaccine comes out at the end of the year, would you take it?
Well, this is a dilemma that a lot of people are actually facing.
I'm very clear with my answer, but what would you do?
Well, I have my own personal answer, and that's going to be, yes, I would, simply because like many early vaccines, the initial efficacy is not going to be as great as the ones that will come later, but at least there will be some measure of protection that you would be able to benefit from as opposed to not having at all. So I can take a later second dosage or a booster or an entirely new vaccine when that vaccine becomes available. But at the moment, I should be covered. Now, the problem right now is for the government. If you are the government, what would you invest on? The first one that rolls out or the wait until there is another vaccine that's going to be available in the future, which could be better, could be cheaper, much more broader in terms of its efficacy. And this is something that Malaysia has seen when it came to the dengue vaccine, you know, like making these very tough decisions, and they cost a lot of money. So if you were going to say, I will buy 1 million dosages of a particular vaccine, and then suddenly another vaccine becomes available, you can't then say, oh, I'm not going to take your vaccine, I'm going to take this one instead. Tawalelah, you know, you're going to have to still pay for the vaccines that you've actually already committed to buying. And this is where it's not an easy task, I think, not just the Ministry of Health, but the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Science, Technology, and Innovation, domestic trade, international trade, and for them to decide which one to put their money on. Because at the end of the day, there's not enough money. We are limited in our resources. We're having to decide, because we're not like Singapore or the United States or China, where for some of those countries, they can manufacture their own vaccines and then be able to roll it out independently of any other effort. For countries like Malaysia, we need to work with other people in order to make sure that we benefit from that economies of scale that I mentioned. Because if we did it alone, it will cost a lot of money, and that is something that we can't afford. Consider Singapore. Singapore today is the vice chair of COVAX because it came in very early on. It stepped up immediately to the plate and said, yes, we're going to contribute to this, and wanted enthusiastically involved. Malaysia only really started deciding on it at the deadline of COVAX, which was, last month. And, you know, when you come late to the party, people pandang slack sikit lah, you know, and this is going to be where we will be disadvantaged if we were excluding ourselves. So the good thing is we are in the room.
Are you sure? Because I was just reading they haven't received our application and we're not really part of it yet.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing. Until the formalities are worked out, we're technically not in the room yet. But we have indicated and we've already started those discussions and we've already made a commitment to pay X amount of money, in this case it's 42 million, to COVAX for that. And because COVAX doesn't have enough money either right now, they will be accepting late entries to the party, even though, you know. But the important point here is, if we have a seat at the table, it will enable us to be part of the discussion, that will enable us to talk about some of the terms that are being put forward so that we can get a better deal in the future. If we exclude ourselves from COVAX for some ideological or misplaced understanding that Malaysia is a poor country and we should be able to get vaccines for free, we will be left out and we'll be looking into the room through glass and thinking, why am I not there? And we'll be given scraps from whatever that's given at the end of the entire exercise. And for our sake and for the people of this country, we have to prevent ourselves from being in that position. So I'm glad that the Prime Minister has indicated very clearly that we are committing to it, and also that the Minister is having ongoing discussions with not just COVAX, but other possibilities as well.
Great. Fingers crossed, Azrul. We'll get there slowly.
Absolutely.
And we'll get Dr. Christopher Lee in our next show. Well, he's had a very important meeting to attend, so he was unable to join us. So, well, with some luck, maybe we may get someone from the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation as well to have a more extensive conversation about access to a COVID-19 vaccine. Thank you for joining us today, Azrul. That was Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of the Gaydon Centre for Health and Social Policy, speaking to us about what this means for Malaysia. Access to a COVID-19 vaccine as far as COVAX is concerned on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.